Tonight we will read and commentary and comment on another of the letters of Yuan Wu, which, who, as you remember, was a teacher during the Song Dynasty, living from 1063 to 1135. This is the first time these letters have ever been translated from Chinese into English. Bring us this additional treasure from this renowned Zen master, person of great influence, and of course very deep realization. So this particular letter is entitled by the, I presume by the translator, Bringing Out the Family Treasure. In Zen, we often talk of, in the Chinese and Japanese times, of the family treasure. Family meaning the family of, on the one hand, all us beings, for this treasure is present for all. On the other hand, is the family of realized Zen practitioners who have become aware of this treasure as being what they are. And it's called bringing forth the family treasure, very much as the word educate means to draw forth that which already is within a person. The practice of Zen is about allowing to manifest, rather than actively drawing forth, but allowing to manifest by doing what is necessary to see through that which prevents the natural revelation and realization of this family treasure, which is that which we all are. So the work of Zen is not a creation of this family treasure. It is not doing something in order to create a way of being or make ourselves into some kind of extraordinary being or anything like that. But the radical teaching of Zen, Buddhism in general, but overtly and centrally in Zen, is that we are all this one reality. And this one reality is not two. It has no division. It is not, although it produces and generates and is manifested as what we call time and all the many disparate and different things in the world, it is not an it. There is only one reality, manifested in so many different ways. Manifested as you, as me, as trees and birds and flowers. To know that requires that one steps out of the mode of understanding, the mode of standing outside of what you are attempting to know. It's essential to realize this process, that everything that you attempt to understand requires presuppositionally that you are separate from it. Somebody is trying to understand some it. And that is initially the reason, no matter what the conclusions are about the thing that you're trying to understand, that it is the initial limitation from the knowing that is the source of liberation. And the family treasure, namely that which you are, can never be understood. It can only be known by doing what is necessary to drop away attachment to the practice of understanding and stepping outside. This is essential core of all the practice of Zen. So he speaks of bringing out the family treasure. So he says, if you want to attain intimacy, and he has intimacy as a capital with a capital I here, and that's meant to differentiate it from an intimacy that has all the other meanings. Intimacy of close knowledge of, close bodily relationship with, and so on. Not that they are different from this intimacy, but this intimacy is something that has qualities different from all the particular manifestations. So this intimacy is very much another word for it might be this identity, this oneness with. And of course that's the aim of all intimacy, to have that oneness, that non-separation, nothing in between. In other words, a disappearance of self and other. This is what Zen always works with, this differentiation between self and other. This and that, I and thou, now and yesterday, all these things that when you look into them, you cannot find a true reality about them. They are ideas, but they do not reside in one's experience. The closer you get to the intimacy of your experience, the more these things dissolve into the realm of ideas. And this again is a part of the practice of Zen, to insist on experience over all interpretations. And the closer you get to your experience, the more it becomes nameless. So he says, if you want to attain intimacy, the first thing is, don't seek it. If you attain through seeking, you have already fallen into interpretive understanding. So whatever you think you have attained through seeking may be wonderful, may be useful, may be all these things, but it is not the realization, the making real in your being of this family treasure. This is another very important principle of the practice of Zen. When people misunderstand Zen by thinking that it denies or disparages the work of the intellect. It does not do that. It just points out that all these works of the intellect have their usefulness, and that this work is not one of those useful places. Precisely because to engage in intellectual activity requires separation, requires I and it. So transcending that I and it, going into a place of knowing that it does not partake of I and it, is a part of this real practice of Zen. So he goes on, he says, this is especially true because this great treasury extends through all times, clearly evident, empty and bright. Since time without beginning, it has been your own basic root. You depend on its power entirely in all your actions. And he says this great treasury extends through all times, clearly evident, empty, and bright. One has to understand what is meant by clearly evident. Clearly evident means that when you have removed the filters of interpretation and naming, then it becomes clearly evident. So intrinsically, to one who has dropped away these filters, things are clearly evident. But until you know the difference between a name and this nameless, which you can find anywhere, that is to say, to really understand and allow to have its place, but drop away reliance upon arbitrary names, a name of oneself. As soon as you investigate that carefully, yourself, you find that there is no entity that you can possibly find that merits the name of I. It is all identification, it is all arbitrary, and it certainly isn't what walks you and breathes you. What is that? What is a tree? Stop your thinking, we'll allow all kinds of ideas about a tree, but the closer you get to it, the more you realize it is an arbitrary designation of a particular piece of this one reality. It cannot be isolated and still be a tree. The same with a human being, the same with anything. They're all arbitrary, temporary designations. To truly know that is to move a long way towards the place where you would be free of obstructions, where the family treasure can start manifesting forth. The family treasure is not dropping away the names. The family treasure is made possible to realize by dropping away attachment to the names. What is the family treasure? Nothing but the one thing that can be known only when you drop away all reliance upon separation. These words, empty and bright, they invite someone to think empty as opposed to fullness. This is not what is implied here. This word empty is used so much in Buddhism, especially in Zen, and it's a pointer. It points to something. Empty. It's not in contrast to fullness. It is, in fact, Alan Watts called it the pregnant void. In other words, everything is there. It is just empty of reliance upon names, distinctions. Empty of the foolishness of making real judgments of good and bad, and superior and inferior, and so on. Seeing all those as being mere stories that human beings dwell upon. Allowing those to be just stories that human beings dwell upon and giving them no particular importance is to move to that place where, again, this original reality, this family treasure, can start to emanate itself and start to be known. And bright, what does bright mean? It does not mean, as some artists depict it, as having a halo and a shining in some particular way. But what is meant that it becomes clear and evident. It is like if you shone a bright light on something, then you see it clearly. But if you have only a dull illumination, then it's not quite clear. The intellect is like a dull illumination. Since time without beginning, it has been your own basic root. You depend on its power entirely in all your actions. It's a manner of speaking to say you depend on an it. More, that all your actions are manifestations of it. Your thoughts are manifestations. All the things that you think are illusions are manifestations of it. All the dreams are manifestations of it. Everything that is within the realm of your experience is a manifestation of it, perfect and complete. What can that be? When one thinks of these things, one is driven to the end of thought. When you're driven to the end of thought, but retain curiosity, retain wondering, then you are doing the practice that leads to realization. If it is not this, if it is not that, if I cannot find any fixed self, if it cannot be my role, my function, my body, my history, my accomplishments, my emotional base, my consciousness itself, if it is none of these things, what is it then? You get street smart, familiar with the way in which the human being has substituted stories, rather than going to the direct experience. Going to the direct experience is beyond the sensory experience. But the sensory experience still is broken up and still refers to someone who is sensing something, quietening that even more, and still stretching and wondering. This is to engage in the practice. This takes time because of the momentum and the habit forms of the old ways of approaching everything. One has to look with kindness, with poignancy, upon all these old ways. You understand, we human beings use that. They are useful in certain contexts, but they have no real substance. Nothing that is named can ever be isolated from the whole. Nothing. Nothing is a separate thing, except for convenience. But underneath convenience and behind it, you realize it really is not separate from anything. And this is not a conclusion to be relished particularly, but more a corrective for any time that thoughts want to take root in the mind. Thoughts of this and that want to take root in the mind. You go, oh yeah, right, one of those. Minds do that. And then returning to the naked, nameless experience of the moment with this stretching. What is it? What is it? This is to engage in the lively practice of Zen. It says you will only pass through to freedom when you cease and desist to the point that not even a single thought is born. Then you penetrate through without falling into sense and matter and without dwelling in conceptualization and mental images. It is our habit to represent the world, to re-present the world, to have the world presented to us, and then we in our minds have to re-present it, have to create some structure, have to, and that's fine. But it's a matter of noticing we can do that. But that doesn't lead to liberation. It presupposes somebody and an it. What is beyond that? What is underneath that? Going to the point where not even a single thought is born. What does that mean? Again, you don't think about that, but you, as you are being alert and aware when you're sitting and doing your zazen, you observe the mind and you watch when a thought, before it comes into being, there's a little nudge, a little something, a little approach of a image or an approach of a word, or there's something that indicates the about to enter into consciousness of a thought. And at that stage, simply noticing and letting it go. Making it okay with you to not know what that thought was. Nor to in any way gauge yourself in terms of your success in letting these things go. These all are thoughts. They're all simply little structures, little stories that we weave in our minds. And letting them all simply be. As I say to folks, they're none of your business. Just because it comes into your consciousness, it's none of your business. Just let it be. Let it be. Endless phenomena. Need none of them to be attended to. This is to learn the art of being in charge of your mind versus having all these thoughts be in charge of your mind and run you, basically, like a puppet. Unchosen thoughts, unchosen states coming into the being. Shift the tables on them, as it were. And notice them. It's just phenomena. They're not yours, just stuff. Happening as the result of the coming together of a myriad causes and conditions, very few of them being within your ken, your knowledge. Let them be. Let them be. As though you were, as I once said, an 11,000-year-old person who has experienced all these things. Oh, endless times, endless times. All these kinds of thoughts and all these kinds of worries and anxieties and designations and elations and sadnesses and all those kinds of things. Just, you've experienced them hundreds and hundreds of times. And say, oh yes, it's just stuff. It's just what happens in a divided consciousness. So, there's nothing, sure. Learning. And then your consciousness is about, what is it? What is this? In the silence of all that, what is it? And then be really attentive to everything. The movement of your breath. The movement of your legs as you get up, sit down. He says, when you absolutely transcend these, and by these he means conceptualizations and mental images, when you absolutely transcend these, then the whole world does not hide it. In other words, transcend your concepts and ideas and stories about yourself and the world. What is really there is not hidden. It can suddenly reveal itself. It can suddenly reveal itself. But if you do all these things, you believe you're dropping off conceptualizations and so on, and you're waiting for the world to reveal itself, it shows that you already have this additional contaminant, this impatience, this wanting something, this making this current situation not okay until you have this something. And when you see that, you go, ah, we human beings, we're like that, aren't we? And you let that be also. So he says, when you absolutely transcend these, then the whole world does not hide it. Everywhere, everything becomes its great function, and every single thing flows forth from your own breast. The ancients called this bringing out the family treasure. Once this is attained, it is attained forever. How could it ever be used up? Everything, everywhere becomes its great function, and every single thing flows forth from your own breast. In other words, there is no opposition, there is no self involved. There is no it that is of any concern. Concepts have been seen through as being stories, as being mere conveniences, mere navigational aids, but not it, not anything about fundamental reality before all these were invented. The mind has quietened its attachment, its grasping quality to have some understanding, some concept, something to hold on to. And the paradox is that when one lets go of all these traditional things to hold on to give some kind of security within the changing world, then all of a sudden you can be faced with this, what is called the great function, that you didn't have to worry about having something to hold on to. For there's only one reality, and you are that. And within that, death, birth, duration, transiency, they all are mere ideas. Mere nothing, actually. The sources of insecurity before just are the sources of insecurity before. You see it as, in a touching way, as being what we human beings do. What characterizes us as divided beings. But no longer does it have power over you. As he says, the whole world seems to flow forth from your own breast. So goes on, he says, just be wary that your investigation does not rest on a firm footing, and that you will not be able to penetrate through to realization. Just be wary. In other words, don't settle for anything. Don't conclude, oh, I finally made it. I finally understand it. Put everything into doubt. Well, yes, human beings do that. We've been so eager for things. And we get some profound insight, and we hold on to it. Oh yes, back to the practice. And that way, one drops away those things that can easily reveal only that one is impatient, grasping, He says you must bravely cut off all entanglements, so there is not the slightest dependence or reliance. Relinquish your body and give up your life, and directly accept the suchness that faces you. There is no other. The Nasudogan, a little bit after Yuan Wu, a few years relatively after Yuan Wu, would have as a kind of an encouraging word within his Zendo. Abandon body and mind. Body and mind abandon. Shinjin datsuraku, datsuraku shinjin. Abandon body and mind. Body and mind abandon. But this does not mean giving up the caring for the body and the use of the mind. Not at all. It is not to denigrate the body as opposed to something spiritual or the mind and whatever. We're talking about attachment. When we say let go of, we don't mean killing yourself. We don't mean anything other than there are these things that happen, that work, that function. The problem is the identification with them. Me, as measured by what I understand, what I've gained, how what kind of esteem that I give myself or that I gain from others. That attachment. And the mind, the way one may be able to have great clarity and ability to create constructs of understanding and so on. It happens, and so, it's a function, and so. You don't have to own it, you don't have to make it a possession, you don't have to use it as a gold star. It's just a function. Instead, looking underneath all of that and behind it, what is it that is not subject to any attachment whatsoever? For there is only one thing, and therefore no duality to have somebody attached to it. What is this one thing? How can one disappear into that one thing and thus appear as one or one's original self? This is the practice of Zen. How do you do that? The reason I say it in this way as a rhetorical question is that for me to say, well, this is how you do it, A, B, and C, would be to rob you of your treasure. You have to wrestle with these questions yourself and for yourself prove that none of these things have any substance. When you do that, the great question arises. The great yearning, the great wondering arises in your being. And that is the thing that makes the world fresh and new at each moment. And it is the thing that moves you along, how to put it, the more that helps you to align with this great flow of this great river of Dharma. Without having to be bothered by somebody who has attained or is flowing with the river of Dharma. So we mean by abandoning body and mind. So Goyan, he says, thus, even if the 1,000 sages came forth, it wouldn't change you at all. And in other words, the 1,000 sages coming forth for many people would be a great opportunity. Let's get tickets and go and visit them. It would be a great opportunity to receive the wisdom. Yeah, well, it would move you. It's not important. It's not that you deny them. It's not that you think they're bad or good or anything like that. But it's just that there's no need to do that. For you yourself are that one reality. He says, leaving it to the flow at all times, eating food, wearing clothes, you nurture the embryo of sagehood to maturity, not keeping to intellectual understanding. Isn't this an especially excellent teaching and a most excellent shortcut? Critical is his phrase, leaving it to the flow at all times. For that which frightens many people is this prevalence of transiency. It's always changing. Nothing is graspable. And for folks wanting some stability and yearning for something in the world that you can count on, to say abandon all to the flow and let go of all those things that you have been wanting to hold on to can be frightening. But when one realizes that it is in the service of knowing that which changes not, that which is truly beyond time and beyond change, and yet it is not an it that is constantly the same. These words do not apply to that. They're all pointers. By abandoning to the flow, you find that which changes not. What is that then? Then you sit, you observe, you stay with your experience of the moment. You get closer and closer, more and more intimate to the experience of the moment, not diverted by any thoughts and stories. Just here. And in that place, you examine this which changes not. And you see, changes is in reference to something fixed. Changes not is in reference to flow and change. What is it that is the flow and yet changes not? Is that? And you, if you pursue this honestly, you cannot figure it out. You must accede to quietening the mind, no longer being pulled around by that mind that wants to grasp some explanation, some way in which A and not A can be put together somehow, some new logic. Well, that new logic can be found. But not by trying to put A and not A together. But what is that? Change. Change is not. And you experience the breath in and out. You experience your call, your move, whatever it may be. And the fact of sitting, or standing, or walking, or the fact of some pain in the knees, or whatever is going on for you, some sounds. You wonder at that place, in that moment, what is this that is the resolution, the stepping out of all change and changes not? What is that? And with courage, the obvious may appear before you at that point. What is always evident, as Yuan Wu says, what is always clear and bright and not hidden. This is the wonderful work of Zen that brings forth for everyone that which they are. This fundamental treasure of the family. We'll end there tonight.